Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the NBC War Telescope, and in just a moment, we'll take you to Berlin for today's highlights on the Big Three Conference. But first, this message from your government. If you want to keep warm and comfortable this coming winter, you will have to prepare for it now, this summer. First of all, you should store whatever kind and quantity of fuel your dealer can let you have. Don't wait for some preferred kind that may never be available. Second, check up on all heating equipment to ensure peak efficiency. Clean your furnace and install controls or other heat-saving devices where available. And finally, protect your home against loss of heat by installing insulation, storm doors and windows, and weather stripping. That's the way you can be assured of a warm, comfortable home next winter. Now, Morgan Beatty, NBC reporter representing the Combined American Networks, is standing by to bring you his story. We take you to NBC in Berlin. This is the NBC newsroom in New York calling Morgan Beatty in Berlin. Come in, Berlin.
With General Lucius Clay, an expert in the harnessing of industry and jobs. But it's quite clear to anybody who has seen the ruins of Berlin that the Big Three can do no more than lay down broad rules and principles. That they can only try, by this method, to attract Germans out of the past to take over the task of self-reconstruction. It is difficult for us Americans, whose streetcars are running, whose trains at least get you where you're going, and whose people all have someplace to go. It is difficult for us to picture life in Germany today. We are likely to say that everything is either black or white. This afternoon, I saw a family whose belongings were loaded on a single cart, walking through the center of the rubble that was the heart of Berlin. The baby was wailing in the buggy. The mother and the father didn't even seem to care where they were going. They were simply on the move. Yet, within the hour, I saw children in a suburban part of Berlin who looked to be well-fed, scooting along on steel, pre-war toys, and having all the fun that children can. I saw a chubby baby girl sitting on a heap of rubble, waving a small white flag and blowing a whistle like a traffic cop. Nothing you can say about Germans, therefore, is either true or untrue. In the country, on farms, untouched by bombs, life goes on as usual. Even much of the industry is intact, except for the machinery that's been taken away, perhaps 70%. In the few suburbs of Berlin, comparatively undamaged by bombs, people somehow manage. Perhaps it would be easier to tell you how confusing everything is here, to illustrate the problem of the Big Three by giving you the reaction of a Berliner to what he reads in the newspapers permitted by the Allied Powers. This Berliner is much more intelligent than the average, and he's had much more than the average in the way of wealth and family life. But his reactions are interesting, nevertheless. Here, for example, is a paper of the left wing he has just picked up. The Social Democratic newspaper. Not communist, you understand, but leaning somewhat in that direction. The newspaper reports Radio Moscow's broadcast, however, on the big conference, the opening of the Big Three Conference. Radio Moscow says the question or issue of peace in Europe is involved, and that everyone must look to this exciting event in Potsdam. My German newspaper reader looked up as he read this and said, yes, that is true. For us, this conference means everything. In Berlin, he went on, we have little food now. Any German you see will tell you the Russians took everything without even thinking that Germany asked for it by devastating Russia first. The next headline article in the paper was headed, We Want to Live. It was a sort of proclamation appealing to people to go to the country and help the farmers with the crops. I asked my interpreter why he did not go. He had no means of transport, he said. No friends in the country, no farm to go to. Besides, he had taken 6 years of bombing, more or less. Why not stick it out as long as he could get a crust of bread? He loved Berlin, even though much of it is in ashes. Then there was a big political editorial in this, shall we say, left-wing newspaper. The title was Looking Backward and Looking Forward. It went on to say that the Social Democrats warned the German people, until they were muzzled by the Nazis, warned the Germans that to choose Hitler was to choose war. And during the war, the press couldn't tell Germany that their country was on the road to hell. But now, things were different. So said my newspaper reading Berliner, that is true. But is there any need to say it? Everybody knows it. As he spoke a few miles away, the foreign secretaries of the great powers were working long hours all day to try to lay down the principles to find the road back for the Germans and still treat them as enemies. But my newspaper reader spied another item as he went on. That one, he says, is a report. Let me see. That one is a report about your Admiral Nimitz. He announces 2,000 American planes have raided Japan. Many planes from your carriers. Then my reader smiled ruefully. I can believe that, all right. Look at the city. It was very bad in the daytime, I remember, he went on. I don't know why it is, but somehow you always want to be home when disaster comes. You do not want to be out shopping, especially, or passing the time of day in the sunshine. And I, who had seen a few bombings in London in my day, remember how it was exactly the same with the British. They always stood up well under the strain of bombing, as long as they were at home, as long as families were together. The German newspaper reader and I were sitting today in bright sunlight again in the garden of a fairly fashionable home in Zehlendorf, a suburb of Berlin. What used to be lawn was full of Irish potatoes in bloom, and garden peas and tobacco plants. And they tell me, by the way, that these tobacco plants make a very bad cigarette. But the home had been requisitioned by the American military authorities. The owner had been permitted to remain in the basement with his family and his one servant. Three other news correspondents and I have been moved in along with movie cameramen and others. The servant has been instructed to clean up and to look after our clothes. It has all been done politely but firmly. And the military authorities check frequently to see that orders are carried out. Things like this make the Germans realize that theirs is a conquered country. They are under the orders of our military or the Russian or the British. And so the newspaper reader and I sat out in the garden talking about Japan. Yes, he explained, I believe that dispatch in the paper about the air raid you make on Japan. It is not all talk, and I think from our experience that Japan must be finished in 6 months. I wondered how he could be so sure, but he went on to the next item. There was a three-line announcement of the Italian government. Italy had declared war on Japan. My reader smiled bitterly, it seemed to me. I am filled with laughter, he said. Italy declares war on Japan. That is funny. And here's another story, he explained. It's about 5,000 Nazis in American-occupied territory in Germany. They have been arrested. That's all right, he said. They have to be punished. But what are you going to do about those, like the ones who have been Nazis from childhood? They know nothing else. It was automatic. My children were like that. He didn't wait for an answer. He went on. There was one good thing about the Russians when they came. They did no harm to the children. They would give them chocolate and say, children are alike all over the world. The next article was about a Russian surgeon who had done something or another to save lives. My reader shrugged his shoulders. I hope so, he said, obviously feeling that German medicine and surgery were much finer than any other. He hoped the others were good enough now that Germany was no longer capable of organized research. Slowly the reader turned the pages of the paper. Only four altogether. Four pages. There's quite a lot, he said, about sports, boxing and cycle racing and the like. Here is something about a library. It says a library has been reopened with books from schools and private book collections. It does not say who reopened the library or what are in the books. And here's another story about schools. I believe this, he went on, is about the Russian zone of Berlin. Anyway, he says that 50,000 children are in school again. The advertisements, he went on, are the most interesting to me because you can find something of value immediately about these other things, the conference and politics. Perhaps it is, shall we say, so far that they only talk about peace, safety, freedom, and justice. But the advertisements, I can read them, they mean something to me now. I remember that my reader was one of the upper classes, and he seemed to have done well in the war, too. Obviously, he was not of the left wing. But I asked, what about the ads? Here is one, he replied, about, what do you call it, the exchange. Well, you can take a pair of shoes of one size and exchange them for another size if you have shoes of any kind. I thought back through my trips through Berlin. People's shoes are very shabby. Oftentimes, they're made of wood rather than leather. But few people are actually barefoot. And then there was another ad. A man wanted to trade his piano for food. And a third, his automobile for a radio. And why should a man want to get rid of his car in this town, where everybody walks except soldiers or bicycles, I asked. Well, there was his explanation, there is no gasoline. And perhaps this man has no permit to use his car. There is electric current, you know. On the other hand, he can listen to the radio and find out quickly what is going on in the world. We Germans, said my reader, have to catch up on a great deal. Ah, here is one, he went on. A theater and a movie is open again. That is very good, something to make people laugh. But Anna Berger, the great coloratura soprano, has told me that when she sings perhaps an hour and a half, she is nearly exhausted. Again, I thought, the story always gets back inevitably to the primitive life in this jungle of a city. Every Berliner is only too aware of the primitive here now as against what he had before Hitler started this war. But back to the advertisement. Here's a doctor who would like to buy some surgical instruments. Any surgical instrument. Bombed out, I suppose. Then my reader turned to the communist newspaper printed in Berlin by permission of the Russian army. A German communist paper, by the way. The reader was obviously disgusted without appearing so. He was quite polite about it. But there was story after story, in his view, running home to the Germans that the Nazis had prepared a bloodbath for Moscow before they moved in. That they had wrecked Russian industry as they moved eastward in 1941 and 42. Often said, Hitler's papers were full of the same thing before the war, about the Russians, the killing of Germans in Poland and in Russia even. This is all the same we have had from Hitler. And there were advertisements or advertisements in the communist newspaper too. If one cared to know what had happened in the German Communist Party since Hitler took over, he could attend lectures in several sectors of the city almost every day. And then there's a new local radio station. One of the programs is called The Rhythm of Berlin, meaning apparently that somebody asks people questions and there are answers, a rather dim approach to the information, please, to tell you what Berliners are thinking, or rather to tell Berliners what all of the others are thinking. There's another story, too. The population of Berlin is still 2,700,000, about, out of 4.5 million before the war. Only 120,000 apartments are fit to live in now. The story says the government must help or private capital. What government, my reader asked, what government? And so he rose and left me. I couldn't avoid the same feeling, reported to you so many times before by my colleague from Berlin, that the Germans are so unaware of the trap they laid for themselves, so clearly unaware that all of their troubles can be traced to one man, to the fact that they allowed one man to leave a jail cell and move into the Reich Chancellery. And now three men representing the three great peoples, Russia, Great Britain, and the United States, must confer with each other to decide what will be done next. Some people have objected to the secrecy of their negotiations, perhaps with some reason. That's why I announced pieces of decisions that might have to be changed later on the basis of further planning. And we here in Berlin are hearing persistent reports from you people back home that everybody there is wondering whether something is being done about Japan at the Big Three meeting. There's one rumor that Stalin is bearing a peace offer from Japan, another that Russia's coming in, and so on. Well, the conference is practically a closed book at this time. I can report reliably, however, that the fate of Germany is the first issue of importance at this time. The question of getting food from the East and workers from the West supplied for the winter.
That was Morgan Beatty speaking from Berlin. We're back now in the United States. Here's a summary of news from the other war fronts. Our submarines have struck another blow to Jap shipping, tightening the blockade of the enemy homeland. The Navy announces that 11 more Jap vessels have been sunk, including 4 small warships. There's no further news about Admiral Halsey's Third Fleet, but the Japs have no doubt that our warships will be back to resume their bombardment of coastal cities. In Europe, the Nazi shrine city of Nuremberg is now being inspected as a possible location for the trial of Germany's major war criminals. Members of the War Crimes Commission are there in Nuremberg now, but we won't have any more details until they return to London tomorrow. In Madrid, Generalissimo Franco has sworn in his new cabinet, and there are reports that he may make the 9-year-old grandson of exiled King Alfonso the king designate of Spain. And that's the War Telescope for today. This afternoon, you heard Morgan Beatty, NBC reporter representing the Combined American Networks, who is covering the Big Three Conference in Berlin. This is Jim Waldrop speaking. War Telescope will be presented next week over the network of the National Broadcasting Company.